Are we Gen X?
No, we're not Gen X.
Are we Gen Y?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, we are Gen Y.
You're Gen Y.
I'm Gen Y.
We're millennials.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not a millennial. I was born in 1987. I must be Gen Z.
I don't think you're Gen Z. You just said your knees hurt when you get cold outside. You're not Gen Z.
Okay. Mrs. Melanin.
And I'm Belief Mel.
And we're here with episode 193 of
How Married Are You? Okay, my name Belief, this is Yvette. We've been married 13 years, live in California. We got 4 kids, relationships scary. It's very necessary. We share our love, our struggles. We ask
how married are you?
Every Tuesday and Thursday, shoddy. If you're listening, you're in the wedding party. It's okay if you want to put your hands up. You got the questions, we got the answers.
It's chocolate baby story time.
It's chocolate baby story time. 1, 2, 3, and...
It's chocolate baby story time.
Yesterday, I was about to cut Raya's hair. And he was talking to me and he was crying already. And I'm like, bro, what's wrong? He's like, well, I don't want to say because you're going to yell at me. I'm like, what? He's like, every time I tell you something like this, you yell at me. And I felt really bad for him because he was expressing that middle children don't get treated differently. Mm. And he was saying that, like, you know, every middle child I've ever talked to says they get treated the worst. And I get treated the worst. And I'm like, well, how did you get treated the worst? And he was like, you know, it's just not fair. Like, things that happen, like, you tell Uzi and I get to do things I don't get to do. And you make me help them do da 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 da. And I was like, does Theo ever help you? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, like, what's the problem? You got to help your siblings out. And so he was basically trying to explain to me that, like, basically life isn't fair. And I was telling him, life isn't fair. And I, like, had to explain to him, like, you know, some stuff about life. And he just didn't get it. And he's not supposed to, but it was, like, it was kind of a rough lesson because I think he actually has a lot more grace given to him, you know what I'm saying, than everybody else. But he can't see it. And so it's really difficult for me to be like, bro, I don't care nothing about what you're talking about right now. Because I do care that he's upset, but I don't really. Because I'm like, bro, you don't even know what we do just to get through to you. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, that was tough. And I know that it's hard for him. And it's not that I don't care that it's hard for him. But I do want him to understand, like, bro, like, you... We consider you in ways that we don't consider other people. Mm-hmm. And you got away with a lot more than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Were you going to tell them about what happened the other night?
What happened the other night?
When he was then banging, that woke you up?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. I was going to say something else, but that's a good one. So the other night, I was home. And Glenn and I had gone to, like, a concert the night before. And I don't know. I didn't get very much sleep or something. I don't know. I was tired, though. Anywho, I am home. And it's bedtime. And I think I tried to watch TV as I was going to bed. But I fell asleep on whatever show I was watching. And what woke me up...
What time was it?
It was, like, 10. Oh. I want to say it was about 10 o'clock at night. What woke me up, actually, no, I'm lying. It may have been more like 8:30. So maybe I wasn't asleep yet. Because I feel like Uzi woke me up at 1:02. I don't know. It's all a blur. Anyway, the point of the story is that I heard a loud banging noise to the point that I believe if Glenn were home, he probably would have gone and got the gun before he, like, did anything else. However, I heard it coming from the boys' room, so I wasn't too alarmed. I just figured they were up to something. So I walk into the room And it's obvious that Raya's like running into bed and Theo is just like kind of giggling type thing. And I'm like, what is going on in here? What is happening? Yada, yada, yada. And Theo goes, oh, I can't remember what the word was. I think he said Raya's practicing his teleporting skills. And I was like, well, what does that entail? Like, what is that? What is the noise? And then Raya gets up and proceeds to show me what he was doing. He was throwing his entire body against the wall, y'all. Just boom, boom. Like, and this is like the hard part of the wall, right? Because isn't the wall, because this is the wall like to the outside of the house, not between rooms. It's like concrete. So this, I don't think it's concrete, but it's like hard wall. So this guy is throwing himself into the wall trying to see if he can go through it, y'all. And I
how much speed was he getting before he hit the wall? Was it like,
well, between his wall, his bed, from his bed to the wall, which I don't know.
Because he's 100 pounds. Ryan's 100 pounds. So just imagine someone taking a 100-pound sandbag
And
throwing it up against the wall.
Or one of those little medicine balls that we do in the gym.
Yeah. It's not a concrete wall. It's definitely drywall and studs and then stucco.
Yeah. Yeah. So... And I know the comment section is going to be telling us all about who Raya Bo is, and we already know. Can I share? Do you think that's too much information to share?
I think so. Okay. I mean, I think there's so many different variables that we're still trying to work through right now. I don't know if it's that's appropriate yet.
Yeah.
But boys do stupid stuff. Like, I would just say that is just a boy thing to do. Not all boys, but some people are probably like, yeah, my son does that, and I was confused by that too. But, you know, it's nice to know I'm not alone, right? Like, some people are going to be like, yeah, I get that. But what we don't understand is why that is okay in his mind.
And I just want to point out that it was multiple times. It wasn't just like two times I heard the noise. I kept hearing the noise back to back.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could just imagine it me walking into the room.
Yeah, you would have done something different.
And I would have been so angry.
You would have thrown.
I'd have made him like hug the wall, face the wall, do a squat toward the wall. I'd have called him the Kool-Aid man for like a week. I would have been so upset because, excuse me, I feel like it's very inconsiderate at nighttime and bedtime to be throwing yourself up against the wall like that.
And I feel like that's the type of stuff you're talking about when he's like, oh, it's not fair. But, dude, you're, like, consistently not considering other people.
Never. Like, never, not once, ever.
Yeah.
It's just something that he doesn't do. You know what I mean? So, and it was very difficult. So I'm just kind of like, all right, man. And I'm going to have to live with this. Excuse me. I'm going to have to live with this, like, lack of self-awareness. Like, this is going to be him for a while. So there's some people who are like very entitled. Like, I watch children grow up, and you know, like I saw this thing where 50 Cent's son Maurice was talking about how, you know, his dad only pays a certain amount for child support. Guess how much money it was each month.
Who is it again?
50 Cent's son, his oldest son.
He pays a certain amount. He probably pays like $100,000 a month.
No. Not that much.
Okay, like.
So he gets $6,700 a month in his pocket from his father for child support.
To do what with?
To live.
Just to live. How old is he?
I don't know. I think at the time he was like 17 or 16.
And he's getting $6,700 a month and he's complaining?
Well, that's the thing. He was like, that's not enough to live off in New York. Like, you can't do nothing with that. And I'm just kind of like, the world we
live
in.
So he's not trying to get a job or anything.
I don't know.
It's supposed to be a supplemental.
Well, I mean, 50 Cent, I mean, we probably have a bunch of people who, because 50 Cent has done some very, you know, wild things. But I'm a fan of his business, you know, acumen. And so he's also like his son, like he tried to start a sneaker business for his son, bought a sneaker store and gave his son, because his son was really into sneakers. And sent all the shoes. He bought it out because it was closing down. He sent all the shoes to his son. And the son was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. Me and my mom are going to start this other business together. His mom was trying to work. It's like a lot of weird stuff. But anyway, I'm not, I know my son is not him, but I just think about the entitlement of some children. They just don't get it. Mm-hmm. And I think we all were kids once and we just were like, these parents just don't understand, for lack of a better word, right? But like when you're in the parent stage and you kind of like, oh, this is going to be a long lesson and I'm going to be the bad guy until he's in the bad guy seat. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, because this is the same kid who's like, I want to live with my friend's parents. I want to run away from home. Like, this is that same kid. And I'm like, yeah, man, sometimes you got to take out your trash and sometimes you got to help your brother or your sister bring their laundry upstairs. That's mm-hmm. okay. Like, that's not, you know, a reason for you to feel like you're being treated unfairly. You're just helping out. And that's mm-hmm. really bare minimum. But anyway.
It kind of reminds me of a conversation we had recently where you're like, you know, I think we feel entitled to the fact that as we get older, life should get easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like that's a lesson that we as a 38 and 36 year old are still learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's 9. I feel like he's thinking like, you know, I should be more independent or be able to like make certain decisions for myself. I don't know what he's thinking. But I think it definitely goes along the same lines.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah. Yeah, man. Anyway, so last week we talked about a sex challenge. 7 days. How long did we last?
3.
And I was, be honest, I was wiped out.
Were you?
Day 3? I was like, all right. I mean, like, I could do 3 days in a week, but 3 days in a row, I was like, man, I'm actually tired. Mm-hmm. Because our days were full as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But yeah.
It's nice to know. It's nice to hear that.
Why? Because you don't feel like you're doing your job or something?
No, because it's nice to know that there is like a, like there's too much.
Yeah, I mean.
Not to say that that's too much, but I'm saying like to know that you have a place where it's like, because, you know, the world would make it seem as though men want sex every single day.
Every moment of every single day. And it's uncontrollable.
Yeah. But to know that you could be like, I'm good. Like, we don't have to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's actually really, like, comforting.
Yeah. And that it could be a testosterone issue with me. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. But they're like, we did 3 days straight. And we literally got cut off because
yeah.
we had stayed down. Yvette had this like master plan to like make me rest. And so
it didn't work.
She was like, yeah, well, you stay down San Diego and you rest and then we'll link up the next day.
We went to a concert. We went to like a what is it called? A mixer or like a networking event.
Oh, yeah. We went to a networking event.
On, I don't know what night of the week it was, but we went to a networking event. And then after that, we went to a concert. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, since we're going to be down there, it's a nice opportunity for us to just have a night away for ourselves. And so I arranged for childcare for the one night, but I got an Airbnb for 2 nights. And my intention was to go home the next day and then let Glenn stay and rest or yeah. hang out or whatever he wanted to do, really.
Yeah, I mean, but I think I appreciate that. And I know what you were trying to do. I think for me, on nights where... Okay, nights where that would work out perfectly. It's like a fight night where all the homies come over and we watch the fight and eat and crack up, right? Maybe a time when me and a couple guys can get together and work on music. We can all work on music together. That would probably be a good day to do that. But me alone at night makes me feel like I'm too far away to protect the house. And it makes me very anxious. And that's just the issues I got.
I can see that.
So we went to the canceled Daniel Caesar concert.
The concert wasn't canceled, but Daniel Caesar apparently is canceled.
It's canceled. But what happened was, like, I never really listened to Daniel Caesar's music like that, except for, like, Best Part. And then I was talking to somebody... And this summer, and they were like, "Yo, this Daniel Caesar album is kind of fire." No, I was at Nordstrom's Rack.
Oh, you heard it?
And I'm like walking around, and I'm listening to this record. I'm like, "This is cold. Who is this?" And it was Daniel Caesar. And I'm like, "Oh, this is a really good song." So then I go and listen to the record, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this record is so good." It is incredible. And I had it on repeat for probably like a month. Listening to it in the shower, like going deep into the lyrics. And it's something about people who have been like canceled, like their pain is really high up at the top of what they're going through. And they're writing exactly all their feelings. And they're kind of like, well, it can't get any worse than this. So they're saying all their like unfiltered thoughts. And so we get the most pain out of that. And out of a lot of pain comes the best creativity. So I really was enamored with this thing. And I was like, oh, man, this album is so great. So I already love the album, and I've been trying to put people onto it, and everyone's kind of like, nah, it's whack. It's whack. It's whack. And I think it's really because, you know, he said all that stuff that he said, which was really stupid. And shout out to people who say stupid stuff, because that's all of us, right? We all say something stupid at one point in time. You guys have told me I sound stupid in the comment section. You guys said Yvette doesn't sound smart or whatever in the comment section, too. Like, we all get canceled by somebody. So I don't know. I really enjoy the record. Yvette got me tickets for Father's Day. Mm-hmm. She got me tickets to the concert. I was like, oh, this might be a cool thing.
I didn't know he was canceled.
Yeah. So
I was trying to just say concert. Glenn wouldn't put him.
No, I mean, like, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Not our crowd.
Mm-mm.
Not our venue.
Mm-mm.
We're old.
Mm-hmm.
We left early.
Mm. We bought two albums. We supported.
And so I think it was... the first thing you said, it was like, my something hurts. What was it? Your knees? Or... No, you were like the weather. Something about the weather in your knees.
Well, you know that I'm an old person trapped in a young person's body. I guess I'm not that young anymore. But I've always had that whole, like, when the weather gets cold, my knees, my bones just don't act right. It's like I need some WD-40 or something inside my... Yeah. Bones.
And we're short people, and it was a standing venue, and so we couldn't see over anybody. So we were kind of having to like weave through people, and Yvette's trying to find the perfect spot to stand. My back's hurting, and I was just like, we should go.
Yeah, and then you got people smoking and all kinds of stuff. So there's smoke blowing like everywhere.
Yeah,
and then there's people like literally sitting down on a blanket having picnics. So you have to like watch where you walk in order to avoid tumbling over them.
It was like a festival.
It was a lot.
I think it was actually really cool. But, like, if I was, like, 24, mm-hmm. I probably would have been, like, all in it, mm-hmm. you know? It was fire, though. Like, the show was dope.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed hearing him live. And then he introduced us to
Orion's Sun. Yeah, who's really dope.
Who was a good artist as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, should we tell them about the rest of our week? We also went to the Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood Bowl, yeah.
To experience John Legend live and in person. We did a little meet and greet.
We got an invite the day before. It was like, you know what? Let's have this guy come up there. And I felt very honored. And mm-hmm. I was like, ain't no way I'm turning this down. So big shout out to Deborah and Christian for watching the kids for us.
Yes.
Came through. And we were able to go check out this John Legend event. Got to do a meet and greet. Mm-hmm. Yvette got to meet him for like
4 seconds.
4 seconds. but they gave us food.
Yeah.
And we like really had a good time. And we got to hear John Legend's story, mm-hmm. which is amazing. Mm-hmm. If you have an opportunity to see him live and they're making it like just him, and it's just a John Legend show, go see it because the storytelling is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He was with a choir and an orchestra. It was really dope.
Oh, man, the choir was beautiful.
Yeah, it was really cool. So big shout out to John Legend and Loved One for inviting us there. And, yeah, where are we at? We talking about topics today.
Okay, so we do have a email, but I was just thinking, because I feel like this has kind of turned into like a casual chit-chat.
Okay.
Last night, I was listening to Dr. Anita Phillips and, oh my gosh, Crystal Hurst Evans? Crystal. I don't remember.
Tony Evans' daughter.
I don't know if it, let me see.
Daughter-in-law.
I screenshotted a portion of the conversation because it was just so interesting. It was talking about quitting. Are you interested or no?
Well, I don't know.
Crystal Hurst. Her name. I know you don't. I haven't done well with recordings in the past, but maybe we can cut this part out.
Can you tell me the gist of
it? I can't.
Okay.
You know I don't do good with that.
Okay. How long is this?
It's not long.
Physical stuff, and then I just ran.
How many minutes is it?
No, the whole thing is like 20 minutes, but I recorded 4 minutes of it.
Okay.
Really is. It's okay to quit. I should write a book about quitting. Let's quit. Because there's this thing I learned. So I got to preach a little. So there's this thing I learned when I was studying gardens and trees that some trees do. It's called fruit dropping. That if the tree senses that the soil does not have the nutrients and water that it needs to bring the harvest to fruition that it's working on, it'll just start dropping fruit off its branches mid-development. And when enough have dropped so that what is left can be sustained and brought to fullness, then it'll start growing them again. Fruit wow. drop. If the soil is indeed the heart, as the Bible says it is, we can reach a place where we do not have the emotional capacity to sustain and grow and bring to full development.
What are your thoughts?
I don't have any. I need you to ignite my thoughts because it's your idea.
So it was interesting to me because I was thinking about quitting. And
quitting what?
Just in general. Okay. Like nothing specific, but just kind of like, how do we know when it's okay? Like the fact that she like kind of gave us permission to quit. You know, like, for example, I don't think we quit, but she does go on to say about like sometimes the fruit drops and then you pick it back up, which that analogy didn't necessarily stick with me because I'm like, well, how do you attach it back to the vine?
You don't attach it, but you continue the process without the extra weight.
I see. That's a good one. Yeah. So anyways, the fact that it's okay to quit, I feel like it's kind of a thing where I feel like quitting is frowned upon mm-hmm. often, especially when things get like hard. And so for me, it was kind of like, well, when things get hard, how do we know it's okay to quit versus persevering?
Mm-hmm.
And so anywho, it was an interesting conversation. I wanted your thoughts on it. That's all.
I think quitting, it depends on what you're quitting, right?
I was more so, honestly, I was thinking along the lines of like, for me, I was thinking along the lines of Yvette Unplugged, homeschooling,
uh-huh.
influencer.
Uh-huh. Just quitting all
Just
that.
Just quitting.
Yeah,
because I'm feeling pulled in so many different directions, and I do understand seasons, and sometimes you just put things on a shelf and you pick it up later.
Mm-hmm.
However, some things I'm kind of just like, well, what am I doing anyway?
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting. It was just her. Crystal Hurst was taking her makeup off, and they were just chit chatting. It was so sweet. But
I think that like one, I think there needs to be more honor toward like stopping things that aren't beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the scriptures, they're talking about how everything's permissible, but not all things are beneficial. So you can do most things, but some of those things aren't going to be beneficial. So when you don't have if you don't know what or why you're doing whatever you're doing, it's easy to forget or to want to continue. So if there's not a mission attached to whatever you're doing, I think those things are the ones that you pull out of, that you say, hey, not right now, right? So for a long time, I've been wanting to do this children's content, Frank Puppet, real bad. Mm-hmm. It's all I ever wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like before Belief in Fatherhood, like I wanted to, I've been like obsessed with this like black puppet character since Theo's Gift, mm-hmm. which is right when Theo was born, 2013. So I've always wanted to do this, but I did not realize how much strength it took,
how physical strength,
like how long your shoulder has to be in the air mm-hmm. and your hand has to be able to communicate. And it's so hard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm losing my voice. Like it's so many mm-hmm. different things that you got to pay attention to. And so I stopped doing it because I was like, not now. I can mm-hmm. do this later, because right now Belief in Fatherhood is paying the bills. Music has a history of paying the bills, and I got to honor the family that I have mm-hmm. and not just pursue this thing that I want to pursue because I want to do it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're like quitting to me doesn't seem like that's not a word that I would say I'll get pick this back up later. I feel like quitting is quitting.
Mm. Okay.
So I don't necessarily like the word.
The way that, yeah.
Because it's like, no, you're done. Mm. Right?
Quitting suggests a finale.
To me.
Like it's done.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're running in a race and you quit, you lost. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But if you close a document and you quit the document, you save it, you get back to it later. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think of like running in a race, quitting, or mm-hmm. like being in a competition and quitting. You lost. You know, not to say you can't win the next one, but that one you lost. And yeah. So I definitely said Frank, not now. And now I'm picking it back up. But some things I can't quit. Me, right? That doesn't mean that you should not be reassessing homeschool, influencer life, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But if I was to quit right now and I say I don't want to do Belief in Fatherhood anymore, that's not true. We have been having some issues with the kids and how they want to be on camera. So it's been really hard to create and like get stuff out. But I don't want to quit, mm-hmm. right? But if I quit, then the employees that we have lose, right, a place to work. Mm-hmm. And if I need them again, I also lose trust. Mm-hmm. So I lose almost kind of my word with them. Hey, we're done. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't feel like it, mm-hmm. you know? Then who trusts me again after that, you know? Yeah. It's a lot of Christian clothing lines that have started and died within 3 months. There's a lot of not just Christian clothing lines, but clothing lines in general. But
yeah.
I get hit up by people. Hey, man, I'm starting this thing. I would love to send you some free stuff. I'm not wearing that thing. I'm not wearing that. Don't Why send that to that? Me because it's not going to be available.
Oh,
possibly. Hmm. Well, it would be available if you shared it. But what if it ain't? What if you just decide you don't want to do it? Because it's not attached to a mission. It's attached to a fad. It's attached to a trend you want to do.
Yeah.
You know? So quitting can be necessary. But I think that if you don't have a vision and a mission and a why toward whatever you're doing, it's easier to quit. And it's understandable if you do.
Can you talk? I'm sorry, this may be turning more into an interview. But I feel like when you speak in that way, it reminds me a lot of Through Us and what the mission is. And I feel like when you, for you, and even just listening to John Legend the other evening, like our stories are so important.
Yeah.
I was listening to Chandler Moore this morning, and he was talking about how, you know, how sometimes we have to embrace where we come from in order to understand where we're going. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whew. Like, interesting. But I feel like our stories are so important and entangled in our current journey that we are walking through, mm-hmm. and then literally like our destination. Mm-hmm. And so when you say that, I'd like you to elaborate more on like that idea of your story and embracing it.
Yeah. So, right. So Through Us is a agency that we created that is designed to help you find your story and find your people. And when you find your story, it allows you to go back into the reason why, right, your actual DNA and the makeup of you to say, okay, now I know that I want to solve this problem because of what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you find your story, it actually allows vulnerability, authenticity for you to connect with other people that have identified with part of your story. Not your entire story, right? There's mm-hmm. some people who like rock with fatherhood that didn't, you know, had their dad every day. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? There's some people that, you know, watch How Married Are You that have great marriages. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But it's just a smidget.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, I think that most people would assume that we're kind of like this marriage counseling type duo. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like, if you just get a glance of mm-hmm. the content, it would say that. But what I'm saying is that, like, most, like, some people are just like, yeah, I just need to see other black couples.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I need to know that I don't have to be perfect
mm-hmm.
or that I can argue, get through it, and still be attached to mm-hmm. this mission. And so, yeah, your story is super important,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's certain things about your upbringing that directly affect the reason why you are called toward a certain people or you're called toward a certain profession or you do something with ease, right? Like, when I think about fatherhood, it's not complex or complicated. It is very, like, one, like, I'm not, it's very little emotion for me. You know what I'm saying? So what does this moment require? Do I have enough for this moment? And if I can, I will. And if I don't, I'll remove myself because I know I don't have enough
mm-hmm.
for this moment. And I think most of us are trying to be something we are not built for a certain type of people because we believe we're called to someone or our mission is open
mm.
or the market is open for the specific people. So we want to interject ourselves, right? And so if we could just focus on our own story and telling it well, we will find our people and they won't feel alone and they will attach themselves to our personal brand, product, whatever. And we can move forward into this place where we're not so much thought leaders, but we are leading a people while being led, right? So E.T., I got a huge connection with E.T. The reason why is because I remember what it was like being young and having that argument with my mother all the time and always getting kicked out. His story was, I thought I knew everything. I got kicked out. I slept in abandoned buildings, eating out of trash cans. You know how many times I've heard him say that?
A lot.
Over 100 times this man has told me a story, and I never got tired of hearing it because every time I heard it,
you resonated.
I resonated with it a little bit more. Now, I didn't sleep in abandoned buildings. I didn't eat out of trash cans. I slept in my car for a couple weeks, and that was it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the extent of my story there. But there's still, like, a disconnection of, like, I know I'm built for more, and I don't know what to do. You know, what's my calling? Like, what does it mean to be successful? All this stuff, like, I attach to that, right? And I need to hear it over and over and over again. And so most people want to tell their story once, and it's over. But you got to keep doing that and keep reminding people of your why and why you do what you do. Now, if you don't figure out why you do what you do, you're always going to be spinning the block trying to attach yourself to what other people are doing. That's why we have so many influencers getting hoed out by companies because they don't know why they do it. Why they're doing it. They're just out here trying to stay cute.
You know, it's interesting because as you're talking, I'm like, I wonder how this translates to relationships when you first meet someone and the importance of understanding their story. And I was trying to think back to, like, when I first met you
mm-hmm.
and what about your story I connected with. And I feel like it had a lot to do with your faith, for sure. I think that was, like, the thing that I connected with the most.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how, like, what types of questions someone would ask another person who they're just getting to know in order to figure out that type of thing. Or is it even necessary to have that sort of connection
Do you remember our first date, our walk on a pier? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the questions we were talked about?
Mm-hmm.
You can name any of them.
Do you want to have children? How many children do you want to have? I think we talked about our career goals, maybe. Did we? I feel like I always talk about my career goals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think one of the questions was like, was that the first date where it was like if you were on a boat and everybody fell off and you could only save your spouse or your children? That was the first date?
That was the first time we hung out.
Mm-hmm.
So even at that moment, I'm trying to assess where the priorities are for you. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I think when you first meet someone and it's a connection like that, I think you guys are trying to start a story.
Mm.
It's like page one of a story. It's like you're starting your own story, but not really understanding what the first edition or the first book that you wrote with your family and the book I wrote with my family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't know if stories lie so much within the individual meetup of a person.
Because I don't understand that statement.
So, like, I don't know if you knew my story and it attracted you to me.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think what we were attracted to was on the surface.
Yes.
Right? Or what we could know, what we knew about each other from then. But you didn't know why I served.
Mm.
You didn't know I didn't want to serve.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, I, you know, those kids taught me how to do that.
Mm.
I wasn't built like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so you're probably flabbergasted at, like, nowadays you're like, yo, let's go. So such and such needs us. I'm like, what they need us for?
I want to say something because I feel like we recently had this conversation and it kind of caught me off guard, some of the things that you said. But there is the story of the individual in the relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the story of the family of origin that individual came from.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the truth of the matter is, as we get older, so, like, as I'm getting older, I'm 36 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that I am coming to terms with, or there are things that I'm learning about my family of origin
uh-huh.
that I didn't necessarily know when we first started dating.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, and then now, okay, I'm trying to
uh-huh.
so basically, you know, stuff comes up
uh-huh.
as we live a little bit of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in a relationship with someone for 13 years and you're like, I didn't sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. If I would have known this before, maybe I would have done something a little bit different type
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So how responsible or accountable to my parent story or my family of origin story am I, or in said individual, than... Like, you know, do you know what I'm trying to say?
I understand.
Repeat the question that I'm asking, if you understand. Interpret what I'm trying to ask.
I don't know what the question is,
okay.
but I understand the topic.
Okay, what's the topic?
All right, so the topic is, you know, I have a family of origin, you know, that has started, and now I'm discovering so much about my history. And there's work to be done, is mm-hmm. what I see, is mm-hmm. what I gather,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's where it stops for me. I don't know the question there.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, there is the story. So when I met you, I was 23. Well, when we first started dating, I was 22, right? So I was 22 when we first started dating, and there is a story that was true for me. As far as who my family was,
mm-hmm.
was, and how that impacted me, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I've grown older and gone through therapy, other things have come to the surface as far as a less of a rose colored, what is it?
Rose.
It's less filtered. the story mm-hmm. that I've gotten, because now I'm an adult, a grown adult, mm-hmm. and there are things that I understand, and there are things that I now know. Wait a minute. You know what I mean? And so it's in, for me, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, when we talk about our story as an individual and then how we're marrying something because someone, because we resonate with some part of their story. But then as we get to then, and then, you know, we get to know them a little bit better in the dating and courting process. And then we get married mm-hmm. and then we grow a little bit more and we find out more. Mm-hmm. The story evolves.
Yeah.
And sometimes in a way that is not pleasant mm-hmm. or not attractive to the other person. It ain't resonating in the, you know, nice way. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, how do we, I don't know if the word is adapt.
Yeah, I think everybody's built for a certain mission. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, what we have, you know, discovered, you know, later on in the story, we define words differently. You know what I'm saying? So when we think of family, mm. we don't even define those words the same, mm-hmm. you and I. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm actually in the process of redefining those words, healing my inner child through my own family.
What?
Like, the word family mm-hmm. is being redefined mm-hmm. for me through my raising of our own family. Mm. So I don't have a correct definition of family. Mm. So even when we discuss it, I'm kind of like, oh, is that what we're supposed to do? Or I don't think we're supposed to do that. Mm. I think they're actually playing me. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I don't trust it. I know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't trust it. So we don't have the same definition. And so I think that's probably a good exercise for us to do, is to define what family is.
I think that it would be a great exercise.
You know? Mm.
And it's not who, but it's what. Or is it both?
I think when we figure out what the definition of family is, mm-hmm. then we can figure out who's in it. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because if we talk about who's in it, then we'll change the definition just to fit people in. Mm.
Got it. Okay.
So I don't know. You know, like, I think that, you know, based on my own experience, I have a cutoff, you know what I'm saying, for what I tolerate, you know, or what I accept mm-hmm. or allow. And that cutoff is for me to keep me safe and sane and out of jail. You know what I'm saying? And even on my side of the family, I'm like, yo, y'all need to get out of my face sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, I don't know what this means. I don't know what this is calling me to. And I need to understand what I'm being asked to do. And even when you ask questions to family, it can be perceived as disrespect. Because I'm trying to understand, hey, what are we doing here? You know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not of the, you know, let's just move forward. I'm not of that cult, right?
Wow, that's a strong word.
I believe it's cult. I believe it's a cult-like philosophy that, you know, most people from Gen X.
Gen X?
Are we Gen X?
I think we are. What are we? I forget what we are. No, we're not Gen X.
Are we Gen Y?
No.
Yeah, we are Gen Y.
Gen X was born between 1965 and 1979. 1980. Okay, so Gen Y. You're Gen Y.
I'm Gen Y.
We're millennials.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not a millennial. I was born in 1987. I must be Gen Z.
I don't think you're Gen Z. You just said your knees hurt when you get cold outside. You're not Gen Z.
Okay.
Anyway, so what I'm trying to say is, like, I'm not from that. I feel like that is, okay. Here's what I want to say. This is why it's cultish. Can we communicate here?
Wait, I am Gen Y.
Yeah.
Oh, so are you.
Yes. Okay. So what I want to say is, I feel like any group of people that would allow abuse to happen and don't correct it is in a cult. I feel like that's cultish behavior. Because if we want to send, you know, such and such to jail for abuse and this person to jail for this, but, like, let Uncle, what's his name, get away with it? Like, I feel like that is, like, allegiance to demonic behavior that is just tolerated in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is cultish. And I think we need to at least say, hey, we're not going to pretend this ain't happened.
Mm-hmm.
Either this dude needs to go to whatever institution he got to go to, or this person needs to go, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't pretend it didn't happen. And I'm not going to let you think I'm crazy for not pretending it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I am not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we talk about this all the time. Love, my belief, love doesn't mean access. Forgiveness doesn't mean trust.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, but you do not have access to me. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. I forgive you, but I will not trust you.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know what I'm saying? Especially when there's no work being done.
Yeah.
Especially when there's no accountability.
Yeah.
I can't pretend. And so that's kind of like where I'm at. And I'm called up to accountability. I can go all the way to the cliff, to the edge of the cliff with you. Once you step over that edge and be like, man, did you know we could fly? And I'm like, nah, we can't fly, bro. And you're like, look, and you jump, and automatic, like, somehow the wings of the cult keep you lifted, right? The grace and the love of the community keep you lifted up, and you can't fly, but I can't fly, because when I start to throw my wings, my hands, I'm gonna go to jail. And ain't nobody got enough love for me to keep me out of that joint. That's the definition.
Mm.
That's my definition.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I think the love story, you know, and this is, I think most people, I think some people are kind of like, yo, wherever you going, I'm going. And I'm with you 100%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of my trauma, I know that, man, if I get there, I might not make it. And I know for me, it's better for me to be a father, you know, on this side, you know what I'm saying, than in any other situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's, you know, very difficult.
Yeah.
Was that your question?
No, but I mean, you talked about it a little bit. We're good.
I'm curious about your question.
About the family thing?
Yeah, because I don't know what you mean by that.
Maybe I don't either. It was something that I just was... Because I'm just thinking about how, like, they're okay. I'm trying to think about ways to say things without saying things. Mm-hmm. But there have been relationships that I've had with people mm-hmm. where I get to know them, right? I get to know who they are now in this season. But there's a part of their story that led them to where they are today. And when I learned that part of their story, I'm like, oh, you know, whatever. And so for me, I just think about how long it takes and how many, like, I met you when I was 22 years old. I mean, we started dating when I was 22 years old. And so that's 22 years to catch you up on, you know, that I can't necessarily catch you up on.
That's also 22 years for you to catch on with
facts.
Yourself.
Facts.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not doing that introspective work, which I was not at the time,
mm-hmm.
then there's so much that is left unsaid or left un... Like, there's that... what is it? What do they call it? You know how in stories there's, like, foreshadowing and then, like, the... What do they call it? They just did it with Game of Thrones. where they go back and tell the prelogue.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Prequel.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's like the prequel, you know what I mean? And I think even in the prequel, sometimes people just really don't see. They don't have that complete view because they were in the midst of it. And so for me, I just think so much, like I've really become more fascinated. So the other day, where was I? Oh, I went to this event, this fundraising event, and I ended up at like a table with a woman that I didn't know. She was older than me or whatever. But we got to talking and she was telling me her story, and I was like sitting next to her and whatever. I would never have thought, you know, that this is her story. But a little brief little snippet of her story. She, when she was super young, she went out to, oh my gosh, I can't remember which country, to meet her husband somewhere, right? And she thought she was only going to be there for 7 days. But when she got there, her husband left her for like a local person. He was in the military or whatever. Left her. So she was stranded all by herself. What was supposed to be 7 days ended up 7 years. And she ended up becoming like planting churches and doing different things. And it was just like, whoa. You know what I mean? And it was, and I think we got there because we started talking about faith in some sort, form or fashion. And then she had kind of like an unpopular opinion. And then we kind of got the backstory of like where that came from. Mm-hmm. But I just, in this season of my life, I'm so fascinated by people's stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to hear your story. And when I think about my own story and how much of it that is unfolding even in my own life, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, I was living with this story. But as I'm getting older, I'm like, oh, there's more to this story. Mm-hmm. There's more things that were at play. It's kind of like with Raya, you know, like his perspective right now is just in his 9-year-old body and the things that he can see within a certain radius. Right. Mm-hmm. But as he gets older, there's going to be so many aha moments of whatever. The other day I was in my car and I was weeping because I was thinking about the fact that like, I was thinking about all the things that I have on my plate and how I'm feeling pulled in so many different directions. And then I was thinking about my own mother. And there are some frustrations that I have about like some of the things, some of the way she handled things in our childhood. And I was like, oh, like she was probably just really trying to survive and doing the best she could with what she had. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so there was this level of grace that I was able to extend to her because I was like, at this point in time, all I want to do is run away. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to like, I don't want this responsibility. I don't want the weight of it all. And so I feel like perspective is so valuable.
Yeah.
But when we meet people, we just really, we really don't know their full story. And I think that as you're meeting whomever it is that you are desirous of possibly marrying one day, there needs to be room for that, like, grace. There needs to be grace for that room or that lack of awareness to their full story. And you need to understand that their story is still unfolding, even the story that has already been lived.
Yeah.
And that you're going to, it's going to become a part of your story that you're going to now have to deal with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say that I believe that is true. I don't think that had I known the full story, I would have been like, yo, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I definitely, it's just like information. Like before we got married, I was like, yo, I got debt. Mm-hmm. I got debt. And I don't want you to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't want you to be in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so there are some things that not only I was in the dark about, you were in the dark about too, you know? And so, you know, what's interesting about prequels is that you get to discover more of the nuance why behind a certain character's reasons for their, why they wanted this. Mm-hmm. You know, and through therapy, I've been able to understand more about my reasoning for like, yo, I need to do this fatherhood thing. This is really important. Mm-hmm. Why am I so passionate about these people? Why am I so called toward these people? Mm-hmm. Why are you so passionate toward mothers? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Right? I believe that we are versions of what our parents or what we needed at some point, you know? So I am like not confused on the reasons why you do what you do. I'm not one bit confused or like surprised. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the prequel for me is kind of like, oh, that makes total sense. You know what I mean? But now I'm kind of like, okay, what are we doing with this information? Because if we know the why behind why the person's does so many different things about our marriage, like why you love the village and why you're like, yo, we got to make sure we, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, what? You know? But I get it. Like, I totally understand. If we watch, we know, right? But now, the sequel is now, this is like act two. So I'm like, okay, what are we doing with this information? How are we moving? And who is in the position to be affected with this information that we have? Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, proceed with caution. I'm Theo right now. You know what I'm saying? Looking around, making sure everything is good. Do you know this? You know what I'm saying? You know how Theo's telling you stuff you already know? And I'm telling you stuff you already know. But I just want to make sure I said it and you heard me, you know? So I think right now, you know, the difficult parts in, you know, this part of the story is that I don't know if we know what the win is. You know? Where you might be looking for redemption, you know? And I might be looking for security. Mm-hmm. You know, you get that at all?
Yeah, I think you're going a little bit off.
Okay.
Because I don't think our audience has enough context for where you're going.
Well, we're talking to each other. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to go any.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying. It's getting, I feel like it's getting a little bit too whatever at this point. But yeah, I hear you.
You off or specific?
Specific.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do think we need to wrap it up. So I'm going to ask you, baby, how married are you?
At the John Legend concert, I faced, there was two seats, and it's like the, it's like a box, so you sit in the dinner spot, and it's like a little, it's like a, it's a dining table, and so it's small, so we get in there, and I'm, she's like, I want to face the stage. I didn't have the option. So I sit in the seat, and I'm like not facing the stage, and I got to look at you all night, which is cool, you know? It's great.
Eventually, what happens when the concert starts, all the chairs turn around and they take away the table.
They don't turn around by themselves. You got to physically pick them up and turn them around, which is, felt a little ghetto, right?
I didn't. I mean, it's definitely a little bit more work than anticipated, but I don't think
I'm at the point now where if I gained another pound, I wouldn't have been able to sit in there. It was so tight.
My thigh couldn't even fit through the thing.
It was a tight squeeze.
Yeah, it was a tight squeeze. But it was a really beautiful venue.
Oh my gosh.
And I think it was, you have to experience it for sure at least once in your life.
Hollywood Bowl is really dope. Mm-hmm. How married are you?
I'm so married that I unpacked your suitcase.
Oh, you did?
I unpacked it. I needed it. I needed it gone, but
thank you.
I unpacked it, put everything away, even put the suitcase away.
Nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.